clearest of all, but. Okay, well, I'm going to mute for a minute here, so.
Okay, welcome everybody. Welcome to our regular meeting of the Iron County School Board. We want to excuse Jeff and Stephanie tonight. Wish they were here with us, but they're not feeling well, so we wish them well and a speedy recovery. We will go ahead and call this meeting to order, and we will begin with a prayer by Dave. After which, Megan will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Our dear Father in heaven, we come humbly before thee this evening, and we're grateful that we're able to meet here as a school board and administrators and members of our community tonight and others who are with us. We're grateful to be able to serve in the capacities that we do, and we do consider this to be a weighty and important work that we do here, and pray that our actions and thoughts will be in accordance with thy will this night. We ask you to please bless all of us and help us to do the things that we need to do in order to be well informed and understand the things that we are dealing with. And we ask a special blessing to be with the families of our community, especially as we work with them to support their efforts in the education of their children. We do pray for their children as well, who are part of our district here and our responsibility. We do ask a special blessing upon all the teachers and the staff and others who serve so diligently in their roles as well. And we ask the choice blessings to be with them. We ask thee to please bless us through this Christmas season, that we'll remember the meaning of this season, and pray that we'll be able to always have reverence for those things which are most dear and important. We pray for these things tonight in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Please stand.
Ready to begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, Dave and Megan. We will go ahead and move into the consent agenda portion of our agenda.
I'll motion to approve the consent agenda items.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the consent agenda items. Any additional discussion? And look at the beautiful sunset out there. Sorry, I see your back. As I look down the table, I'm like, wow, that is beautiful.
You were saying that about me, Ben.
No, well, you too, Dave. But, yeah, the sunset's helping.
What are you guys going to do without me?
Okay, any additional discussion? Okay, all in favor? Aye. Any opposed? And motion carries. Okay. Let's see. Next item is our superintendent report. Is that
we have recognition?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have my papers out of order. Okay. First is our recognition, and first off, thanks everyone for being here tonight. We have the privilege of honoring two of our outstanding individuals who have given their time and energy and expertise to serve on the Iron County School Board. Dave Staley and Jeff Corey. We feel bad that Jeff is not with us tonight. Jeff is not feeling well, and I hope he's watching this. Throughout their tenure, both Dave and Jeff have been pillars of dedication and commitment to the betterment of our schools. They consistently came to meetings prepared, offering thoughtful insights, and contributing to meaningful discussions. Their experience has been invaluable, and their willingness to share their perspectives, often informed by deep understanding and respect for our community's values, have had a lasting impact. They've worked tirelessly to preserve tradition and culture that defines our schools, and always strive to protect what makes our district so special. Their leadership, grounded in genuine love for education and dedication to our students, has shaped many of the decisions that will benefit generations to come. On behalf of Iron County School District and the school board, I want to extend our heartfelt thanks to Dave and to Jeff for their years of service. Your work has made a difference, and your legacy will continue to guide us through years ahead. We are truly grateful for all that you have done.
Thank you.
And I have something to add, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
We have something in the school district called the Iron Strong Award. And anyone in the community can nominate someone. And it's usually because somebody's done something that is worthy of being recognized. They've done something special, or they're just awesome at their job, or whatever that may be. It could be a parent or a student who submits this. We have QR codes all through the schools that people can scan and fill out a simple little form. But we have an award to give out. First, I want to share about Jeff Corey. Jeff has devoted countless hours to the students, staff, and families of our district. First, as an exceptional teacher who inspired and shaped countless lives in the classroom, and most recently during his 4 years of service on the Board of Education. Through his leadership, thoughtful decision-making, and genuine care for our schools, Jeff has made a lasting impact that will be felt for years to come. Jeff's commitment to education and his steady, thoughtful approach to leadership have been a gift to our community. He has led with integrity and a true heart for students and educators alike. We are stronger because of his service, and his legacy will continue to inspire us all. Thank you, Jeff, for your tireless efforts, your time, and your heart. You truly embody what it means to be iron strong. Just one more big round of applause for Jeff, please. Jeff will be taking this over to his home along with his other gift and making sure that he gets that. The other Iron Strong Award is, of course, Dave Staley. Over the past 4 years, Dave has been a passionate and thoughtful advocate for students, families, and staff on Iron County School District. His influence and leadership were instrumental in shaping our vision, mission, and values, a foundation that will guide the district for years to come. Dave's commitment to ensuring that families and the district work hand in hand to support students reflects his deep care of our community and his belief in the potential of a home and school partnership. While balancing the demands of his successful business and family, Dave has generously given of his time and talents to serve. His contributions to improve systems and processes within the district are a testament to his strategic thinking and his desire to leave things better than he found them. His leadership has been steady, visionary, and full of heart, and his impact will resonate far beyond his years of service. So thank you, Dave, for your tireless efforts, your vision, and your belief in the importance of collaboration. You have truly earned this recognition as one who is iron strong.
We do, actually. Dave will be doing a board member report, so get your thoughts together, and then we will, give him some time. We wanted to make sure that Dave and Jeff had some time, but where Jeff's gone, we'll have Dave do that. Okay, we will move into the next portion of our meeting, which is our public comments. As a reminder, public comments are limited to 3 minutes. We cannot hear personnel issues. I wondered if I was off again. We cannot hear personnel issues, and please address me as you're making public comments. Thank you. The time is now yours.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yat Asher A Crystal So Yunishia. Two hundred initial, the Ashin Bushes chain, Totichine Dashachedo, Hanagatne Dashanella, Ukut Ego, the Nest Donishla. Hello, I'm Crystal So, and I'm a full-blooded role member of the Navajo Nation. As a board member of the Native American Gardens Association, I'm here to thank and honor two individuals, Jeff Corey and Dave Staley. NAGA was first invited to Cedar City in January of 2019 to answer questions and speak to the community and the importance of keeping Native American images and names visible and honored as this community, which was done for the previous 80 years. We have been following Iron County School District since then and have watched school board meetings and been in contact with many people in this community. In collaborations with American Indian supporters, we have helped those in the community who support us, and they in turn have helped us. In fact, many cherished friendships have grown between members of NAGA and the members of the Iron County community. We continue to fight the battle against erasure and the cancel culture craze that has swept across the country. National polls repeatedly show that we are the voice of 85 to 95% of the American Indians and their desire to have schools retain and reclaim the names and images of our ancestors and actually all the early people of the United States. More importantly, we want to thank Dave and Jeff for their constant support and willingness to stand with the majority of Natives in this area and nationally. We look forward to further discussions with them and others as we continue on our path. Also, we welcome future dialogue with the people of Iron County and the Iron County School District. So I do have two certificates that will be presented to Dave and Jeff Corey. I also have two gifts I would like to give to them. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. I don't want to cut anybody off from running up here, but appreciate the public comments and appreciate you guys bringing that forward and recognizing the hard work of these board members. We do truly appreciate that. Next item on our agenda is the Business Administrator's Report. So Todd, I will turn that over to you.
Okay, members of the board, you have the budget tax rule reports there in board docs. As I've looked through those, looks like we're about where we should be in regards to our budget for the year. Do you have any questions for me on that? If not, I don't have a lot more to report today other than the things in later agenda items. So.
Okay, thank you, Todd. Okay, now we will go to the superintendent's report.
Finally.
excited to be able to share with the board the mid-year stipend appreciation. You see that in board docs. I tried to catch all of them that came to me, all of them directed at you as well for your support of our employees. You can tell these are just heartfelt thank yous, and just wanted to make sure that you have access to that and that you can see that. I'm sure you heard from some people as well, but many of them went through me to get to you. So the other item that I have to just share with you, this is all just informational, but the UHSAA, the High School Athletics Association, has been considering, they do every 2 years, they realign the classifications. And you can see that under the first consideration, they had Cedar in 3A for all sports, mm-hmm. for all activities. In a region that consisted of Canyon View, Cedar, Delta, Juab, Manti, and Richfield, it wasn't, I think, last week, they sent out their second consideration. So a lot of people felt like that was kind of a done deal, that that's the way that they were going to go. Some people liked it, some people didn't. But then they came out with the second consideration. And that one had Cedar High in 3A for football only, and in 4A for everything else. They would have been in the region with the St. George schools. Just so that you understand their process, they now have one more meeting, and that's on Thursday. And I believe they are not settled on this final draft. The reason I believe that is they have invited us to come up and speak to them, which is not normal. Normally, they only hear at this time from schools that want to move up. So they're a smaller school, but they want to move up in classification for whatever reason. But they've invited us to come up, so we will be going up. Roy, Principal Sanders, and I will be meeting with them Thursday morning. And not sure what that's going to be like, but we will find out that day what the classifications are. And just thought you might like to get updated and kind of know where that process is. We don't have any control over that. It's the Board of Trustees at the UHSAA that determines these classifications. So that's where we're at.
Will you be able to give input at that time? Or
we think so. We think they invited us up so that we could address them. So we're thinking we'll probably, I think the standard practice is 2 minutes. I think they'll want to hear from us for 2 minutes. So I'm pretty sure Roy can cover 2 minutes with about anything. So Roy and I and Terry together, I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll work on a cohesive statement to share with them.
We have shared with them, Superintendent. We did share with them our thoughts.
Use your mic. We can't hear you. Please.
What was that? What did you say? I'm sorry.
We have shared with the Board of Trustees our thoughts, and I don't know if that got sent to the board. I don't know that I sent that letter.
I was actually, my question would be, are we leaning one way or the other over the consideration? I've been getting dialogue through my Cedar High texts, and so the dialogue I got for a couple of weeks and then this, and I was like, what? It was a little confusing, and then there was a little bit of a cleanup email today that came out, and so I'd just like to know where we're leaning or what your thoughts are, if we can.
Yeah, we can. It's not terribly, it's not secret or anything. We did a survey of all of the coaches, and 75% of the coaches would like to go 3A for a variety of reasons.
All sports.
All sports.
Okay.
We also did a survey of parents, and it's almost 65%
okay.
of the parents would like to go to 3A. Again, for lots of different reasons. So I think our job is only to share with the Board of Trustees our perspective on that. They need to know that we have plans for Canyon View with the addition of 9 classrooms. They need to know that when that is constructed, the plan is to do a change of boundaries. And all of those things play into, should play into what they're deciding.
And just so the board's aware, it's really interesting, and I reached out to the superintendent to get some information on this prior to. I don't have a lot of students reach out to me on items. I had students email me on this in particular to ask, why, how, and I've even offered to go up with them Thursday if I need to be able to help with that. I was really impressed that students, it was a big enough deal to them that they emailed me on it as we went through.
Advocating so. As well to move to 3.
Yes, to very, very strongly advocating, yes, to stay in all sports in 3A.
And there are some people who don't agree with that. But reality is, if Cedar High stays in 4A, they will be the smallest 4A school. And so there are some pros and cons. The cons, obviously, are travel.
Yeah, that would be the one thing. We would need to budget a little bit more, right, for travel on that B, because we're not just heading to St. George anymore.
Right.
There's a lot more.
But you have to think about this, too. Right now, preseason is a lot of travel. And if they go to 3A, preseason would be St. George schools.
Okay.
So it does kind of, not exactly, but there is somewhat of an evening out there.
And then every other year you can rotate who travels where.
Exactly.
So it wouldn't be.
For football.
Right.
And that's it.
Okay, thank you, Superintendent. Okay, next item on our agenda is board member reports. And Dave, since you're here, Jeff, we have Dave and Jeff for board member reports tonight. But Dave,
I wish Jeff was here. I really do. I want to start with how much I miss Jeff not being here tonight. He's been such a great fellow board member for all of us. And just a dear friendship has grown between us over the years, and I really, Jeff, if you're watching, thank you. I really love and appreciate you, Jeff, and for all of your work and effort that you've put into so many things, the passion that you have, Jeff, and your dedication has just been very inspiring. Particularly his experience as a teacher, he always hails back to that in almost every decision that we consider. And he is a beloved person in our community by thousands of people, well known and beloved, especially by all the many, many students who went through Cedar High School when he was there, and the other schools that he served in before that, I know that they would have remembered him as well. But he'll be very much missed, I know. I'm not going to take too long because that's not my custom. I knew I could get a laugh out of you for that one, and I didn't even get a laugh out of Monica. She is shaking her head with a serious look. Go on, just keep moving, and the faster I start, the faster I'll get done, maybe, right? I want to start with appreciation for the members of our community who show up here often, and some of them are here tonight. There are some who aren't, but it was one of the things that became very evident when we first were on the board is there was a major uptick in community interest, and I think that has held in many cases. Not all meetings are as interesting as others for what the community wants to hear or talk about, but I really do respect and honor the families of Iron County, the parents who do such a good job with their children. We know there are a lot of families that really struggle, and we know that makes our job a little harder in the district. And I remember a saying that Jeanette, I think, said once. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was to that effect. And we know that the family is the foundation of society and the most important place where children are taught and are raised with good values. And it is the parents' primary responsibility to see to the education of their children. And I have really appreciated the board's input, and also Lance, your leadership, and all the rest of you who are administrators here who gave input on the vision and the mission of the Iron County School District. I agree with what Lance has said in the past, that it is the best mission statement and vision that he has ever seen, and I haven't seen as many of those in schools, but he has. But I was just thrilled with how that came out and the guidance that it gives to us in our work, all of us. And all of us had a part in that was very significant. And I think that as we follow the constitutional mandate, especially in the state of Utah, and always realize what our place is as a school district, we are second to the family. We are here to support them, to help them in our role as educators here. I do want to say thank you to the board members first, also for, this has been, I think, kind of a unique board this last couple of years. Has been a lot of fun, and moving to a 7-member board was a little nerve-wracking to us all at first, but it has been so much fun and interesting, and the perspectives that have been shared. We don't always agree with each other. Almost all the time we do, but no, I'm just kidding. Sometimes we have good, healthy discussion, and I think that's been one of the most interesting and enjoyable parts of this. The last 2 years have been really, really fun as we've worked together. And one thing about this board is we're not afraid to talk to each other and share ideas and even disagree with each other vehemently at times, but with good respect always. I think I can honestly say that, and I think all of us would agree that there's always been respect and friendship, true friendship among all of us. And I really, really appreciate that. It's been, I think, kind of a model. I honestly, kind of a model board. I don't know if all other boards have that willingness to share and fight a little and stuff, but still be respectful and be honest friends when we're done. So I love and appreciate all of you. I really do. It's been a pleasure serving with you. Really, I mean that too. And for Stephanie and Jeff who aren't here, I mean that for them as well. The administration, it has been such a pleasure working with all of you. I've learned a little bit since the first day I stepped through that door, too, and I've learned a great deal of respect for all of you. It has been such a pleasure, Roy and Jeanette, Steve and Kevin and Monica, even though you give me a hard time all the time, well, sometimes. No, I wouldn't. And Kevin, Todd, what a great job you do. That's such a heavy responsibility that you have, and you're so professional at what you do. And I know from just the little bit of business stuff we do with accountants and people that do what you do, it's, I don't know how you do it, but I'm glad I don't do that, and I'm glad you do. And you do have a lot of help. You do. That's what it takes, is good teamwork and good management of the team as well. But thank you, Lance. I think I can honestly say the most important decision we made in the 4 years we were here is to hire you as our superintendent. I really appreciate your leadership, your honesty, your integrity, your resilience through quite a few hard things that came our way and your way, especially as things just happened and you tried to handle those in the best way you could. I had a conversation with Lance once, and he and I share some common thoughts on some things. I felt like when I ran for school board, it was what I was supposed to do, and I felt impressed that it was a time I should be willing to serve in this. And Lance expressed the same thing about coming here to Cedar City, because at first he kind of withdrew from that idea. And it's been a great gift from God, as far as I'm concerned, that you're here, and really, really appreciate it. And Shauna, you're hiding in the corner over there, but what a great job you've done. When we first considered a public relations person, I know several of us were like, God, we've been getting along without one for a long time, and it's more money and more commitment, but you have been worth every penny plus a lot more. It has been so good to have your service here. I think that has changed a lot in our district, in the relationship we have with our community. Just been so, so good, and I really thank you and honor you for your efforts. You're very professional and very good at what you do. And I know that the improvement we've seen in our community trust and in our community feeling that the communication has really improved and they understand what's going on has been mostly from what you have done, and then just the willingness of others to be transparent in their work too. That was pretty short, huh, Monica? I'm not done yet. No, I'm almost done. But the only other thing I'd like to just leave is there's quite a few people who aren't happy that I didn't run again, but I also have felt like there's other things that I need to do the next few years while I'm still around, hopefully for a little bit longer. And some of the things that are really dear to me here that I've seen happen that are really good is I do believe that there has been an increase of patriotism in our district because of the leadership of Superintendent Hatch and the efforts of so many other people in the schools and in the administration and stuff. The activities this year were just so impressive, and every year it seems like there's more of an effort to make sure we remember who we are, remember this country that we belong to, and that has been inspiring and something that I deeply, deeply appreciate from all the efforts that have been given. And the other, a couple little thoughts is I believe this board will continue. I think we have tried hard to be open with the public, to have dialogue with you. Not everything has gone as I would have liked, nor as some of you would have liked, but there's always room to work and to have more dialogue in the future on issues that we're passionate about. We have to be really careful not to ever dish out retribution to the public because they didn't vote on what we wanted or whatever. We have to be really careful how we approach that looking forward, and it's going to be a little bit of an interesting road and some tough things that we have to deal with in a lot of ways, but we'll get through it. The times we're in right now are a little tight. I know in our work, in my personal business, we're dealing with a lot of different markets this year and will for another year or two that we've just had to really tighten our belts, and I know we're going to have to do that a little in the district in some ways until we get to a little bit better situation where we can ask again or some way get the things in place that we're needing. But I love this place. I love this community, and I love and appreciate all of you and the many, many people who are not here who serve so well to teach our children. And I just leave those thoughts with you and say thank you and have a good time moving forward. It will be good. I'll still come visit you, and maybe I'll bump the 3-minute mark on a few public comments now and then. We'll see. So thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dave. I appreciate you. All right, next agenda item.
This is the just an information item, but it's for the process of swearing in new board members and the election of board leadership. And Superintendent, you want to talk us through those couple of options?
Sure, yeah. We do have, just for your reference, the oath that's given. We'll include that in the board docs for the next meeting as well, the January 6th meeting, where we will swear in the new board members. Immediately following that, we will need to elect board leadership. No decision needs to be made today about what type of procedure you would like to follow, but it is not as simple as you think it should be. And so there is a more simple version, which is process one. That's a Robert's Rules process where you just basically, you just treat it like any other action item on an agenda. And if a nomination is made, it's like a motion. And there's a second, there could be discussion, and then there's a vote. And if that first person ends up with four votes, then they are going to fill that role, whether it's president or vice president. Process number two is a little bit more complicated, but that's the one that the board has chosen in the past. And so I'll take a little bit more time just to make sure that we're clear on what that means. So the chair would ask for nominations, and then each nomination, oh, by the way, those would be received in order. So the first nomination would be listed at the top of the list and so on. And then each nominee would be given 3 minutes to speak to the board. At the conclusion of the 3 minutes, the other board members may ask the candidate questions. And then we would have ballots, and I have attached in board docs what those ballots would look like. And then we would pass those out. You would need, as board members, you would need to write your name at the top. And then you would vote for one person. Now, votes from the ballots would be counted by the business administrator and a volunteer citizen attendee. And that would be chosen at random. And those two people would report back. If necessary, there could be elimination rounds. So if no one received the required four votes, the one with the lowest number of votes would then be dropped from consideration. And we would have another round. And that process would continue until there were the required four votes. And then we would move on to the board vice president. We would do the same exact thing. So those are the two options. And again, that doesn't need to be decided today. That can be decided the day of. But we like to get that out just so you can be thinking about it and be ready to share the process you think. And these aren't the only two processes. If you wanted to do something else, you can do that as well.
Are there thoughts or opinions? One thing I want to be cognizant of is to give the administration a heads up if we're leaning one direction or another. Because as indicated, if we do the first process, then it'll be typically just like we do in our meetings. We'll be able to run through that. If we do the second process, then there's more preparation that needs to take place to be able to do that. And so if there's strong opinions one way or the others, I will start with my. I like the first process. It's very familiar to us. It's what we typically do. We do have time for discussion, as we go through that process. And so it just seems very much along the lines of the way we typically handle things. And so I'm okay with the first process, even though it's quite simplified versus the other. But are there thoughts?
It looks like the second process gives the people a time to speak. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important.
Okay.
And that part could be added to the first one, too.
Okay, because we've done that before. Mm-hmm. I like that just because it gives me more insight in their motivation and why they want that position.
Yeah. I would do that, too, just because we have two new board members coming in. So I'm not one way or the other, but just with Tyrell and John joining us, I think it would be nice. I mean, they don't know us very well, so it might be.
Yeah.
It might be. I do. I agree with Tiffany. I do think it's important. And if Dave was here, he would still advocate for that as well on
January
6th, because I do.
I would advocate for the second process for that same reason, too. It's nice to hear from people, and if we're not in a big rush, you know, the outcome may be exactly the same anyway, but at least there's a time for a little communication. So I like what we did last time.
And if I'm going to select our next leadership, I want them to fight for it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Convince me. That's what I'm going to say. So I advocate for the 3 minutes.
And I don't have a preference either way.
Okay, thank you. As indicated, we're not taking action or anything on this. We will need to take action, but I think we've given the district a clear insight to the direction that we'll move forward. Item number 7 is also informational item, and it is a bond discussion.
Yeah, this was requested by Jeff, actually.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure exactly what he wanted to ask or what he wanted to discuss, but he thought it would be good to just on this final board meeting of 2024 to just acknowledge the reality of the needs and that the bond did not pass. We do know, as you see the election results, it was not close. Mm-hmm. And I think that says something to us about how we move forward. I will say that I must say that we have been working and we are considering lots of different options. We aren't prepared today to share those. We were targeting the January board meeting, work meeting, as the appropriate time and everything to begin to share some of the options that we've come up with, but we're happy to enter into any conversation the board would like, or if you just want to talk amongst yourselves. But we don't really have any specific direction on this agenda item.
Are there thoughts or input from board members?
Mine is just, yes, January. The sooner the better, so that we can be prepared for this next round. We don't want to delay in talking about options.
The one thing that did happen, Lance, you talked a lot about voter turnout. That happened.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're pleased with that, and we're actually pleased to know the will of the community. It feels good to know that it's not just a small number of people that voted. It was a good turnout, and now we don't have to wonder, you know, 20 votes or, you know, how do people really feel if they would have just came to vote? So that I think that's settled for now.
One of the other things, Todd mentioned this to me in just a short conversation that we had, but he mentioned that in a presidential election year, it is tougher, and that is something I had not known before. And maybe had we known it, we might have moved that a year or something, who knows. But it did definitely bring turnout to the table. And so, yeah, it's going to be a job.
I was in a meeting with other superintendents from around the nation, and we were talking about bonds. That was the breakout session. Mm-hmm. And I told them that we were going for a bond during this presidential election, and they all laughed at me. That didn't feel very good. But maybe we get a little insight into why, because they were like, you're crazy. Why would you do that in a presidential election? I don't know. We just, honestly, we felt like the more turnout there was, the better chance we had. So we actually liked our chances better in a presidential election.
Yeah. One other thing that's good that came out, there are always some silver linings on things, but the last bond a year ago, one of the good things that came out of that was it directed our attention back to the need for us to maintain the capital levy a little better and a little more often and give ourselves a little bit of room to do some of these other projects that we've been able to do with that. I wouldn't say that people were necessarily thrilled with that tax increase either, but it is a responsibility that we as in a governing body have, even though it isn't the most popular, but it should be maintained on a regular basis, and that will help alleviate some of the crunch that we felt, I think. And I did fail to mention to Hunter your professionality in the way you've handled all of these facility things and prepared so much. It has been very awesome what you've done too, and in this whole process. But that will even become a more key thing as we look forward with the use of those funding mechanisms too. But yeah,
I think you'll see some creative ideas in January when you realize you cannot pass a bond. It forces you to look at other options that you may not have considered otherwise. So it will be a fun challenge to try and figure out how we meet the needs in this environment.
One quick thought, and later on we will talk through our audit as we go through here. You know, oftentimes when we hear the term audit, it's like, okay, seeing how we did something wrong or have we made a mistake or anything along those lines. But really, you know, an audit is a fantastic thing and a great opportunity for us to be able to see, do we open ourselves up for risk in these areas? Do we open ourselves up for potential problems or mismanagement of funds? And we have fiduciary responsibility to the public. And, you know, as we look at our audits, I think as we're evaluating those, I would propose we even rely heavier on our auditors to help us to understand the unintended consequences of not maintaining these buildings, not having the adequate space, to be able to better tell that story to the public so that they understand, just like they can see a spreadsheet and see if we're managing the dollars as we should in an audit report. What is the audit and the impact that this has on our kids? If we push them into classrooms that no longer support an educational environment, if we don't have the adequate resources to be able to prepare our kids for the jobs of the future, for the opportunities to be successful in the future. Even our kids who may struggle with disabilities, with different things, are we creating avenues for them to reach the top, to be as successful as they can be? And I was mentioning just earlier a young man from Parowan. It was really cool because he stopped and ran into the person who teaches special ed in the elementary school. And they became really good friends as he went up through the schooling program. And he found a way, he went on a service mission and served on a farm, learned how to work, works on a farm now. He bought a boat and was so dang excited that he bought a fishing boat because Jim Simpson, that's the special education teacher in Parowan, fishes. And he was so dang excited. But you look at the success of that individual that had challenges to be able, are we creating those environments for our kids to be successful in that? And using our audit, using that factual basis of data,
what are the residual consequences of not having our bonds passed? What are the residual consequences of not having those adequate educational spaces for our kids? And so that's just one thought, you know, as we're going through this to evaluate it on it, just as we do our budgets and just as we do our finances, what are the consequences if we mismanage?
Well, and I also want to give a lot of grace to our community, because I know how hard it is to be educated on subjects. We sit here and dive deep into things, and we're in the middle of it, and it's still difficult. And you think about our community members who are trying to make sense of, should I vote for a bond, should I not? It's very difficult. But I think in the past, the community has always wanted to support education. And they've wanted to, but when you get taxpayer whiplash, I think you weren't crazy for wanting to get a bond in a presidential election. I think having more voter turnout would have been in our favor had it been tax neutral this year. But once you say raise taxes, it's a hard thing as a community member to understand, okay, what are you doing with these taxes? And that word raise taxes immediately. I mean, we know that. So I want to give grace to our community and say, you know it's hard to understand everything. But I'm looking forward to these creative ideas you guys are thinking up.
Okay, thank you. So we'll watch for that to come forward again in January. Next item on our agenda is the teacher salary comparison. Superintendent.
Yeah, I'm going to turn this over to Todd. He has been working really hard to put together some of this information for you. This, again, was a request from the board last month that we provide some comparison and some information about how we are doing compared to inflation and to other districts, and very pleased with what Todd's put together here. So I'll turn it over to him.
Hope you can see that a little bit better than I can. it's a little fuzzy.
You can on this one.
Turn around if you need to see that. So as requested, we've done some, or I've provided some information or some charts here that kind of show what has happened in teacher salaries compared to inflation. So what you see here are, well, there are four lines there. The bottom two lines, so the yellow and the gray, are teacher salaries, lane one, step one. So this would be beginning teacher with no experience coming right out of school. And the bottom two are without the legislative amount that the state provides, and then the top two lines are with the legislative amount that the state provides. So the gray line is what the salary would be if we only increased based on the inflation factor for each year. So we went and we found the inflation factor for each year, and I took our 2019 salary, and then each year I increased that by the amount or percentage of inflation for that year. And that's the gray line and the blue line. So the blue line is with the legislative amount, gray line's without, and you can see what would happen if we had only increased by inflation. So in order to keep up with inflation, that's what we would have had to do.
What factor did you use for inflation? Did you use COLA or something else?
Probably no, it was the CPI. It was what the Department of Workforce Services puts out in their economic data for annual inflation rates. So that you can see there's a pretty steep line there between 22 and 23. Inflation for that year was 8%. And so there was a pretty steep line there. The year before that, it was 4%. The years prior to that were at 2% and, 1.5% and 2% type of a thing. And then the yellow and the red lines are our actual teacher salaries on that particular point in the salary schedule. So we have beat inflation for the last 5 or 6 years there and have been able to increase teacher salaries over that time period. You can see the big steep increase in the very top line, the red line, That was when the state changed their legislative amount from 4,200 to 8,400. So there was a pretty steep increase that came directly from the state that year. Okay, so the next few graphs are the same information, but just at different points on the salary schedule. Are there any questions on this before I move on to those different graphs for the different points so you understand what you're seeing here? Okay, so this is lane one, step one. This is lane two, step five. So assuming someone went out and got a few more hours, you know, credit hours, advanced lanes, and they're 5 years into their career, this is where it would have been. Lane three, step 15. So move over one more lane and down, you know, about 10 more years. Now you see that weird yellow line that goes straight across from 1 year to the next. When we kind of redid our salary schedules a couple years ago, there were a few parts of that salary schedule that didn't really get much of an increase other than the legislative amount. So the red line shows what they actually got. That yellow line was just, you know, without that legislative adjustment. But we've still maintained pace with inflation in this particular lane and step. Lane four, step 20. And then lane five, which is a master's degree, step 25. So this is someone later in their career with a master's degree, what they would have been making over the last 5 or 6 years. Okay, so that's comparisons with inflation. Then the next thing that I did was I looked at, that really doesn't show very good up there, unfortunately. The BA at Beaver does a survey of all the districts every year, a salary and compensation survey, and then he organizes all of it and he sends it all out to us, and it is great data. He takes and he looks at, has us each report salary information based on four different lanes and steps, you know, that grades similar to what we've been looking at. But then we can take it and we can aggregate it, we can disaggregate it, we can look at a lot of different things. So what I've done here is I show where our district salaries are compared to several other pieces of that data. So ours are the blue, the dark blue, the ones on the left, with the call-out amounts. The orange columns are the state averages in those various areas. And you can see that we are slightly below the state average. And this is all as of the 23-24 school year. The survey hasn't been done for this year yet, so this is last year. We're slightly below state average in every category except for that bachelor's degree plus 33 credits and 20 years of experience. We're slightly above the state average there. The gray column is the aggregation of large districts. So those are districts similar to our size with enrollment of 10,000 to 19,999 students, so under 20,000. And you can see we're quite a bit lower in every category than most large districts. But a lot of those large districts are in urban areas as well, so their salaries are a little bit higher. The yellow column is central and southern Utah, basically south of the Payson-Dixon line, from what I've heard it called. and on the western side of the state. The lighter blue is rural districts. What's interesting is we were actually not included in the rural districts in the reports that he sent out, because Iron County has kind of become a bigger place. You know, we're more suburban, urban, but I think a lot of us still consider ourselves rural. And so I wanted to show a comparison to rural districts there. And then the green line or column at the end is Southwest Utah. That's our six counties or six districts that are all part of SEDC. So Millard, Beaver, Garfield, Iron, Washington, and Kane counties. And you can see we're right about average there when it comes to those six districts. Okay.
So yeah, that I find really interesting too. We're right on par, a little above or a little slightly below on the ones that actually are nearest to us in just the demographic or area makeup there. Yeah. So that is interesting.
And that is an average. There mm-hmm. is higher actually quite a range yeah. among those six districts.
I'm sure.
Kane is actually the highest paying, cool. which is interesting. But they are one of the higher paying districts. We're right pretty close to Washington County. That's who we're competing with when it comes to trying to attract teachers mm-hmm. to our district for the most part. And then you've got Beaver, Garfield, and Millard that are a little bit lower than the rest. Okay, the next few graphs are same data from that survey that the BA at Beaver does. But it shows our district in comparison with the state average for the last 4 years. And then so at the top of the column, the ICSD columns, you'll see where we rank among those districts who actually participated in the survey. So in 2020-2021, for someone just starting out in their career, so lane one, step one, we were below the state average in starting salary, and we were 32nd out of 37 districts who reported. You go back a couple of years, and we're actually even farther down on that list, you know, 33rd, 34th, I think. But 32nd out of 37, I didn't have that data.
So the bigger the number, the further disparity there is.
Down we are.
Down we are. Okay.
Yeah. Then in 21-22, we were 31st out of 36, so about the same. 22-23, 32nd out of 40, so we made a little bit of improvement, mainly because more districts reported. But some districts reported higher than us, some districts lower. We did improve there. And then for last year, when we really tried, you know, we made some efforts to get our salaries up over the last couple of years, that improved us from 32nd out of 40 to 27th out of 40. So we're getting closer to that middle ground there and coming closer to the state average in regards to teacher salary. So that's lane one, step one. This is bachelor's degree plus 17 credits and 10 years of experience. You can see we ranked a little bit better in this category, and you'll find that as we move up in experience, we get a little better each year. But we did make some improvement from 2020 through to this year. Bachelor's degree plus 33 credits and 20 years. And these don't match exactly our lanes, but they're the closest that we all come together. You can see we do quite well here in regards to the rest of the state. And then master's plus 30, and we do okay here as well compared with the rest of the state. So that's the information. I hope that's helpful to you.
Yeah.
We have made some efforts to try and increase teacher salaries over the last few years. We've had the funds to do it. And without actually increasing property taxes to do it, it's basically reallocation of resources mm-hmm. as well as increases in funds that we're getting from the state in regards to WPU. We'd like to see ourselves increase in comparison to other districts a little bit faster than we are. Mm-hmm. Problem is, they're all increasing salaries too. Statewide districts are seeing the need to increase salaries and attract and retain their teachers. I'm going to be running, I think maybe even over the holidays, I'll run some numbers on our classified personnel as well, just for my own benefit to see how we're doing classified-wise. As I compare our salary schedules to other districts throughout the state on a classified side of things, I think we're pretty competitive there, maybe even more so than with teachers, but we'll take a look at that just to make sure.
Thank you for putting that together, Todd. I know I was the one that asked that question.
I can't remember if that was you or if that was Jeff, too.
I just wanted to make sure we, you know, what our trends look like there, especially against the inflation, but that's really good information. Thank you so much for responding so well and quickly.
You bet. Are there any questions about it or?
Okay, thank you, Todd. Well put together, and thanks for the effort and for the fiscal responsibility that you deal with and managing those funds so well. The next agenda item that we have is an informational item, and it's on the USBA conference information.
Nothing really, just wanted to make sure you had the agenda and everything. I think we appreciate Monica putting together the rooms, and I think she sent out the details on the confirmations and everything. So,
okay, thank you. Thank you, Monica. Okay, we will move into the next portion of our agenda, into action items. The first item that we have is the presentation and acceptance of the financial statements and audit report for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2024.
So we have online James Gilbert from Gilbert & Stewart, the CPA firm that does our external audit. And I'm going to go ahead and allow him to speak, if that's all right, with you, to present the audit reports and what a little bit about what their processes are and what an audit, you know, really is versus what some people think it might be. So go ahead, James.
Okay, that sounds good. I mean, I can turn a video on, but I don't know if I'm going to be on some giant screen that's going to scare people or something.
You won't be. I've got the financial statements up on the screen, unless you want to be on the screen.
No, I don't want to be on the screen. I'm good. I'm good for that for sure. So, well, I appreciate the opportunity to go through the audit report with you today, and appreciate the opportunity to do it also via Google Meet. So what I wouldn't want to do, so I'm not going to really hit a lot of numbers. Todd obviously can hit those numbers and does that quite well and can hit those highlight numbers if we need to do that. But I wanted to go through kind of an explanation of what an audit process is and what we're doing when we're doing an audit. So this audit consists, basically there are four audit reports that get generated from the audit that we perform. The first one is an audit report on the financial statements themselves. So what we're doing is we're taking those financial statements. This is financial information that the district has produced and is given to us. And then we proceed to audit that financial information. And so what we are trying to do is we're trying to form an opinion on the financial statements as a whole. And that process includes various types of audit processes. So that those processes could be looking at individual transactions, which we look at tons of those, confirming balances and other information with external institutions. That could be banks, lending institutions, with the federal government, with the state of Utah, with the USBE, accumulating information from them that ties back into the numbers in the financial statements. Sending out inquiries, questionnaires, interviewing personnel, and all of these processes go together. And then what we do is we accumulate all that audit evidence, and then we're able to form an opinion on the financial statements. And so the financial statement audit report, I don't know if Todd can flip to that, but it's It's on page. Okay, it begins on. Sorry, I'm flipping through my own thing here and right at the very beginning and beginning on basically page one. But so that's our audit report on the financial statements themselves. So the district received an unmodified opinion. So that's the highest opinion you can receive. If we modified our opinion, that means that there was something wrong and we needed to put something different in the audit report to say that something was incorrect or was not in conformity with generally accepted accounting principles. So the district received an unmodified opinion, the highest opinion you receive on the financial statements. So that's first and foremost is very good. So then what happens is there are three other audit reports that actually three different kinds of audits, to be honest with you, besides the financial statement part of it. So they're compliance related. And so they have to do with compliance with laws and regulations and grants and those kinds of things. So there's three of those. One of them is the government auditing standards report, and that's with compliance with laws and regulations, essentially the federal government, but it's all laws and regulations and compliance with program procedures. There's a specific audit report that has to do with a single audit, and a single audit is an audit that's required by the federal government if you receive more than $750,000 worth of federal funds. And that single audit, what we have to do is we have to take all of the major or all of the programs that you've received federal grants for, and then we have to analyze those. And then there's type A and type B programs and all this analysis we have to do. But the bottom line is we have to select a certain number and a certain dollar amount of those federal programs and then dive even deeper into those particular programs and do specific audit work associated with that. Again, individual transactions, grants, compliance with reporting, eligibility, and all those kinds of things. And this year, the grants, the major programs were the ESSER money, the ARP ESSER money, special education cluster, and student support and academic achievement programs. So we specifically carved those programs out and did more in-depth auditing on those particular programs. And then there's an audit report for that too. And then the last audit report is for state compliance. And so there's a certain laws and regulations you're required obviously to follow with the state. That seems to be like those are coming out more and more every year. You got more reports to file, more regulations to deal with. And then we have to choose certain laws and regulations there to test also. Some we need to test every year, some rotate, and some we actually just choose and rotate ourselves and decide what would be material in this particular year. So we're doing compliance testing for the state laws and regulations also. So there's three audit reports, the government auditing standards report, the single audit report, and the state compliance report. And again, the district received the highest opinion you receive on all those compliance related reports and no significant items that need to be reported to the board. Any questions I could entertain?
I would just like to add very quickly, our auditors do a lot of work while they're here. They're here for a very short period of time, just a few days, and then they go back to their office and they do a lot more work at their office, and we appreciate all that they do. But that time that they're doing that off that work here on site is pretty intense, especially for Christy and our accountants, you know, downstairs, and they work extremely hard to make sure that the auditors get all the information that they need during the audit process, and then they work hard year round to ensure that things are being recorded properly so that we can have an audit that ends up with a clean and modified opinion. So I just want to express my appreciation to them and for all the hard work that they do to ensure that we're complying with all of the accounting standards and other compliance requirements that we do have.
I would have to agree with that also. We're there for about 3 days, and we basically start at 8 in the morning, and we work till midnight. We let the staff go home, obviously, but we stay and try to pack as much as we can possibly can into those 3 days we're on site. But then when we're off site, we're getting information electronically, working back and forth and getting all kinds of data. And I just wanted to mention Christy and Todd and staff, everybody does a great job getting us information. We ask for all kinds of stuff. I mean, they're in there pulling invoices, they're pulling payroll data, they're pulling all kinds of information, and they're just rolling it into the room and making it very smooth for us. And they do a great job. And this year was a little bit of a transition year, obviously, in the accounting office, and the transition was very smooth, very clean, and it worked out really, really well. And again, they do a great job of getting information to us that we need for the audit to make it efficient, and just make it a pleasurable experience. You might not think that auditing work is pleasurable, but we do enjoy working with people and enjoy doing our job too. So, and they do a great job of helping us out. So we really do appreciate that a lot. And, you know, the board can only make good decisions based on good information. And we just wanted to emphasize the fact that you're getting really good information out of Todd and Christy, and all the staff are giving you the information you need to make good decisions. And that's what you really need to do. And we just want to emphasize the fact that you're getting good information and that's what you need. You have a lot of really, really good people working for you. So.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, are there questions on this? If not, this is an action item. So we will look for a motion here.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say is thank you, Todd, for all this. You know, the fact that an auditor just said that about your team is pretty impressive. But I noticed when I was looking at it earlier that there's, the last 2 years I've been on the board, there's been a net a positive balance. And it feels good to know that we have somebody who's making sure we have a little cushion. And it went up again. It went up this year significantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are reasons for that. Anyway, it is nice to have that.
Yeah,
for sure.
But I'm sure you will use it wisely.
Yeah.
I want to say thank you to you guys, too, for this. This is financial auditing primarily here, and I know we've done the audits on processes and mm-hmm. internal controls and all those kind of things, which have also scored well. I know there were a few things that you've improved even in those areas over the years, but, yeah, good job on this. This is thank really you. Good. Thanks.
Thank you. Great work to you and your team. Thanks, Christy.
I'll make a motion that we approve the, see what that agenda item actually said here, that we accept the financial statements and audit report for fiscal year ended June 30, 2024.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we accept the financial statements and audit reports for the fiscal year ended June 30th, 2024. Any additional comments? And I just echo the thank you as well to your whole team. I know it's a whole team effort taking care of all of these things, and we've got great people here. So thank you. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And motion carries. Okay, the next item is a first reading.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, first reading, and it is policy 424, use of district vehicles.
Yes, this is an older policy that we found we have some concerns with. It's not clear, and it doesn't address some of the issues with using a district vehicle. So we have made some very substantive changes. We've gotten rid of some of the language and replaced it with other language. And this is a first read, but as usual, after the board has seen it on a first read, we will send it out to all of our employees and let them have an opportunity to provide feedback. But I don't know if there's anything in particular, but some of the highlights are uh, are that it used to say that employee is not allowed to use the district vehicle for personal purposes other than for commuting or de minimis personal use, such as a stop for a personal errand on the way between district and delivery of. So this is problematic. The language allows for too much variability of interpretation of what that means. So we really feel like we were able to clean that up, and we did borrow some language from the state of Utah, the how they manage their employees, the state employees, and the use of state vehicles.
The only question I had on this one is, have we thought about spouses of employees? So say going to a debate competition and, you know, Mr. Maurer, I think his wife wants to come or whatever. I'm just saying, can they drive the vehicle? Is there coverage for that?
Typically, they can't drive the vehicle unless they've had the state driver training.
And the training.
So on occasion, we'll have someone who's not an employee drive a vehicle, but that's extremely rare. They are allowed to ride in a vehicle. That's not covered in this policy. It's in a different policy. But state risk allows for someone to ride, allows for. Well,
our policy requires
cover someone who rides in a vehicle as long as they have permission to be in that vehicle.
So our policy requires approval from the supervisor, explicit approval of the supervisor. Otherwise, risk wouldn't cover.
For the riding or the driving?
For the riding, not. Yeah, we typically don't allow them to drive.
Okay, thank you. Any additional comments on that? As indicated, it's a first reading, so we'll have some time to discuss. We will go ahead and move forward to item number three. Policy 721, library and supplemental materials. And this is a first reading as well.
Yes, and we really do want you to take some time to look at this. This is a result of the legislation of the 2024 session that distinguished the difference between offensive and what's the other one?
Sensitive
and offensive. So our policy has to address that. And we had not updated our policy regarding the legislation around challenges of books. So if somebody felt like something was inappropriate in our library and the process for that. We turned this over to Tim Marriott. He worked with the librarians. He looked at other policies from around the state. We went through it with him in detail, and it we really like it. But it is a major, you know, it's a major change. It's a whole new policy. Mm-hmm. You'll see the old policy is just struck out and in red down there at the bottom. The other thing that we would mention is we wanted to get it in front of you, and we do want Tim to make a little presentation on this at our next work meeting. He has a really good flow chart that helps to explain it, and he is the expert, so we would like you to hear directly from him.
There's just a few things, and I think I'll wait until he addresses us because there's some, I agree with this, but there's some things like keeping the confidentiality of the challenge process, and I'm like, how are you going to do that when you're, I would love a presentation. It was a lot to digest.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
To digest.
Okay, thank you. As I indicated, that's a first reading, so we'll move that forward in the process.
Item number four is policy 729, student out-of-state travel policy.
This one has been a headache for a while, and so this policy is intended to fix that problem, because there, it just isn't, again, similar to the use of district vehicles, it just was not clear enough exactly what we're doing. So we need to make it clear. I'll turn it over to Roy to kind of explain a few of the highlights of what we're trying to do here.
Thanks for that introduction. Ditto. A couple of things. I think we've highlighted a lot of the changes that are obviously there in green. When we look at this particular out-of-state travel, we're talking a lot about competitions or events that qualify teams for national events. And there's been some ambiguity as to what a national event is, and am I competing or am I just being invited? And that's where a lot of the changes have come. I think, as noted, we have, if you look at 3.4, the district will allocate financial resources to subsidize qualifying students' travel to national competitions. In the past, in our CTSO organizations, that's been about $300, and we bumped that up to $5 to kind of adjust for things. I think that's significant. Also, probably the biggest part of this, too, is in 3.2.1. Prior approval must be granted by the Executive Director of Secondary Education before we start that process of talking with parents and talking with kids. A lot of our problems have come when advisors or teachers have moved forward in a process, and then all of a sudden we're getting a phone call at the district office, hey, are you going to support this? All the kids are ready to go. They're super excited. And I'm like, what in the world are you talking about? I have never heard of this. I've been in this business for 13 years now. I've never even heard of this competition. What's going on? And then it becomes like the district doesn't want to support. Parents get upset. And I think we just needed to provide better clarity. So we're trying to do that and clarifying the process of what it looks like to get pre-approval. Any questions on that side of things or things that you've heard?
My question was on the $500. I worry that you've got some students who are financially, it's unequal. And so if you have some kid who gets to go to the national debate competition and their parents can't afford the $500 extra because it's going to cost a total of $1,000, have we considered special? Yeah, okay.
Yes, in this particular policy, it actually addresses that. So they're able to, which is why the prior approval is so important and the timeline. Because in that situation, we recognize that this is a significant financial commitment for parents. And so that prior approval allows for fundraising that can go to help that student go and compete in those competitions. So they can actually go through a fundraising process that wouldn't count towards a group or organization's one-time fundraiser that we allow. A student could actually fundraise for that specific event and use those dollars to support them in that effort. I kind of jumped you a little bit. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I guess just looking at some options for students who financially they won't go because they can't. But I really like the idea of clarifying which national competitions we, support. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that it's just not willy-nilly anybody coming up with, oh, I want to do this national competition. But they're the ones we support, we agree with. But then if you've got a student who can afford nothing to go, we want them to be able to still go and compete because of their talent.
To add to what Roy said on this, too, any fees associated with this are covered under our school fees policies. So if a family or a student qualifies for fee waivers, those fees would be waived in that case.
And several of, like, the national level, if it's a recognized organization, they fund, they're not, they give them a good chunk of money to go to nationals, don't, not enough. I mean, I can think of
no,
at least
for example,
two that do.
I believe the state, I'm thinking of FFA right now, the state would grant like $300 to that student. We were at the time matching that. We've kicked that up to five. So that would be $800 for the student and then an additional fundraising campaign. So that's been my experience so far. I'm not sure of the other ones that you're thinking of.
Okay.
But we
do get a little bit sometimes for the national level, right? To help subsidize it that way.
It's from the state. Yeah, I'm not thinking from the national level. What my experience has been
from
the state.
Sorry, not from the national. The state pays for them to go to the national level once they...
Well, they'll kick... I believe it's $300.
Across the board?
And again, my experience has been mostly with the TSA, our Skills USA, our FFA, and I believe it's $300. If it's plus or minus that, it's plus or minus a couple $100. It's not... $1,500 or $1,000 or anything super significant.
And is the chaperone 100% paid for through funds?
And that is addressed in it's now 5.2.6.1.
There's a word gap in our
right there.
Thing, and I don't think
the district will provide supervision for any students not supervised by a parent or designee. The ratio of student district for the ratio for district provided supervision for students not accompanied by a parent or parent designee will be 1. District chaperone per 10 students with a minimum of 2 district chaperones. So we're not going to send district employees just 1, so we'd always send 2. No district supervision will be provided by the district until the number of students attending the event reaches 5 or more who qualify for the event. So in order, if we're going to send or pay for chaperones, a person that qualifies for national, there needs to be 5 or more.
So if you have one, debate's getting it today. So if you have one student who qualifies it for the national debate competition, that chaperone will not be funded.
No, that would be a parent that would go with that.
And the parent won't be funded either.
Correct.
Well, potentially through fundraising.
Yes.
We would contribute the $500 plus whatever the state gives, and then the student would be able to fundraise for the additional costs, which could include for the parent.
Which will make our fundraising policy also important to look at when we get to that point.
Okay. Just one note on 3.3, Monica, for the CTSO. If you could just spell that out in the 3.3. It is below under the 3 or 4.2. I think we talked about this in the agenda meeting, just so it's clear what that means going forward.
Okay, additional discussion?
Real quick, our goal now is after this first reading is we're obviously this wouldn't come into effect until next school year.
Yeah.
So we do have a little bit of time, but we wanted your eyes on it. Our next step will be now to run things through the principals and get feedback from them and go through that process. So that was kind of our time.
Will it also go to the advisors of these programs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Great.
Okay, sorry, one more question. So let's just say the parent can't afford it. They don't fundraise enough. Is that just a no, sorry, you can't go? Or is there any other options?
We would never tell them they can't go. What we would say is we are able to commit this much, and it's really on them to come up with the rest. Although they are working with advisors for those fundraisers, so it's not like we just hang them out, you know, to dry. It's a group effort to fundraise. So, I mean, not necessarily other students, but the advisor is often an integral part of that fundraising effort and planning and pulling it off and all that.
Okay. But the student cannot go without a chaperone.
We do not have a policy, nor can we have a policy that will manage what parents choose to do with their child. So if someone chose to send their child without supervision, maybe because someone they know lives there and will connect with them, that kind of thing, it's impossible for us to have a policy that would manage.
One of the ways that that's been handled in the past, I know when I was in FFA and we went to National, and I know some of the others have done it, but we would often travel with other schools who had people going as well. I remember one year when we went with Hurricane, and I think even St. George and us from Enterprise. And so I think there's ways to creatively do that. And I do find, at least in the FFA, which I'm more familiar with what they're doing now, and I'm sure these other organizations, they know people in other schools too. Mm-hmm. The advisors know each other. And so if there's needs like that, I think that they're pretty cooperative.
Really
with
good
each
thought,
other.
Dave.
Okay, thank you for all the good discussion. Thanks, Roy and Superintendent, for all of the work on that. As indicated, that is first reading, so we'll move that one forward. Next item on our agenda is Policy 904, Advertising in the Schools.
So this one, this policy has been really focused on physical items, flyers, posters, and we have found that there are situations where an email advertisement that doesn't fit the qualifications up above for a physical flyer. Again, I think the policy does a good job of explaining why we need to be careful how much junk mail we're sending home. But those same concerns don't necessarily apply to email. So we've been approached by a few groups who don't fit the qualifications for the flyer or poster, but we could send an email. We have the ability now to send an email where we can change the sender. Instead of saying ICSD, it says community information. So when somebody receives it, it'll say the sender is community information, and the subject is youth hockey. And we can attach the flyer, and that will get out. We can get that out to all of the parents. We think that that's a really good solution for some people who want to advertise something. And it really came to a head with the hockey because it's something that we want to support, but it doesn't necessarily fit the qualifications to send a flyer home under the policy. Yet, maybe even better, we could send an email. The only thing with this, though, is a flyer, the entity is doing all the work. They're printing the flyer, they're putting them in bundles, they're taking them to the schools, they're dropping them off. With an email, we have to have someone internally doing the work. So we are going to charge a $50 fee if somebody wants to do that. But the event must be for school-aged children. And we have to determine that it does have educational, health, or lifestyle benefit to students. So we're not going to advertise, you know, every new thing that's going to come along. But those types of things we will do. A $50 charge is because it's going to take someone their time. However, we're not going to hold on to that. Instead, we're going to let that go into the foundation budget. And so that will benefit our teachers with their grants that they write. So it really is a good thing and very inexpensive way of getting your information out.
Shannon Hinman, I think it was, who's the assistant principal, was... Yeah, she spoke last time, public comment said some of the language made it difficult, possibly, for PTAs to raise money. So I would say let's just make sure that we put a caveat in there that somehow that for PTA, I think we need to be careful, because I agree, I don't want, you know, lots of junk going out, but that they have some
preference. That's a great point. The policy she was talking about was the fundraising policy. And we did talk to her after, because she was under the impression that it applied to PTAs, but it does not. PTAs have their own bylaws. And this policy, when we're talking about advertising in schools, we are not limited in any way to advertise something that we want to advertise. Yeah. So our PTAs are our PTAs, and we're going to send whatever we want. And so there's no limitation on those types of things.
Okay, thank you. Great discussion. Our next item, I would like to adjust our typical process that we run through, simply because this is the retirement of forms. We're not bringing these forms into policy, but we're retiring them and taking them out. So I would recommend, as a board, that we suspend the first reading, go to the second reading, and take action on this immediately, unless there's concern with board members.
So I will make a motion, or I move that we retire all of the policies listed here. And if you need me to read each number, I will. And if not, they're listed.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we retire all forms as listed on the agenda. Any additional discussion?
I just wonder, how did we come to this list? Can you just give us a little explanation, and for the public too?
Sure, yeah. It is unusual for forms to be in policy. Forms are not policy. Forms are maybe required in policy, but the form itself is not policy and should be able to be changed and adjusted. It could be electronic. It could be, you know, adjustments could be made without going to the board and asking for that change. So we came up with this by simply, I just went through all of the policies and found all of the forms and made this list. And we would like to, we are creating a website, a web page on our website that will just have forms. And so anyone can go there and access them, but we would be able to change that link anytime we needed to. We're also looking at a digital form software that would allow a parent to fill out a form digitally, and then it would automatically go to whoever it needs to go to for approvals, and it would have a workflow. So for right now, those links will just go to a PDF. But in the future, we'll be able to change that link to the electronic form, and that's the goal as we move forward, make it easier for parents.
So with that idea too, then are you putting a link in the policy that will take them to forms, where a policy needs a form associated with it then? Is that going to be embedded in the policy, or will it just be on the forms part of the website?
We had not thought about making a link from the policy. We would just have, we decided we're going to put a forms link under parents and community, a forms link under employee, a forms link under board, a forms link under administrator, so that no matter where they go, they'll find that form link. So we would just reference the form in the policy, and they would know that they need to go to the website to find the form.
Okay,
it has been moved and seconded to retire all forms. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And motion carries. Okay, that concludes the action portion of our meeting. And we do have a closed session tonight. And so we will look for a motion to move into a closed session.
I move that we enter into a closed meeting for the purpose of discussing the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual. Do you want all of these?
Yeah.
Discussing pending or reasonably possibly imminent litigation, discussing the purchase, exchange, and or lease of real property, discussing the deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems.
Second.
Also, this meeting. Oh, yeah, you have to, this meeting. You have to say this meeting.
I have to say, oh, this meeting is being held in the boardroom at the offices of the Iron County School District.
Okay, it has been moved and seconded that we enter into closed session meeting for the purpose of discussing the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual, discussing pending or reasonable imminent litigation, discussing the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property, and discussing the deployment of security personnel, devices, or systems. This meeting is being held at the boardroom at the office of the Iron County School District. Roll call vote. Tiffany?
Tiffany Christiansen, aye.
Megan Ralphs, aye.
Ben Johnson, aye.
Michelle Tullis, aye.
Dave Staley, aye.
And motion carries. Do you need a short recess? Are we good? After a short recess, we will move into